Debrief before discharge. Whatever type of birth or wherever you gave birth, you will have some sort of birth debrief. A debrief gives you an opportunity to think or talk openly and honestly about your experience of birth. It is important that your story is acknowledged, even if that's only by you. Going through a debrief can help you make sense of what happened at the birth of your baby, but also the deep emotions you are feeling that went with it. Ideally, you should have a debrief before you are discharged from your midwife, around day 10. There are a few different ways to debrief, so this section will cover your options and how to go about debriefing. Three ways to debrief. As you know, giving birth to another human is a huge deal. No matter what kind of birth or experience you had, try to record it before day 10, as every passing day with your baby is full of new memories. You will probably forget things or they gradually become patchy. 1. Write down your story. Writing out your birth story helps to clear space and create room for any internal self-chatter you may have. Your birth story doesn't need to be particularly long or over-descriptive, just whatever works for you. Use writing as an outlet. As you run through it, write out any questions you have or anything that doesn't make sense. Time passes quickly in labour, and your perception can become obscured, so always write your take on what happened. Then, if you are happy with everything, it all adds up and makes sense, you don't need to do much else, other than add to it as and when you feel the need to. Some women end up turning this into a little diary log on their phone, with recordings and pictures to go with their journey into motherhood. 2. Go through questions with a midwife. If you have any questions or anything doesn't make sense, it's important to go through this with your midwife. Even if you can't see the midwife who looked after you in labour, a midwife will understand all of the medical terminology documented in your notes and be able to explain it to you. Whether it was a positive or difficult experience, you need to know what happened, when, and why. You might be given that tiny bit of information that then completes a whole puzzle in your head. It's a good idea to let your midwife know beforehand that you have a few questions and may need a little longer at your discharge appointment. If you need any follow-up care or appointments, your midwife can identify these and either signpost or make them for you. 3. Birth reflections or debrief at hospital. If your midwife can't answer all your questions, fill in certain gaps, or you are struggling to come to terms with your birth experience, you may need to refer to the birth reflections or debrief service in your hospital. Don't feel silly asking for this. Perhaps 80% of your birth was perfect, but you have a niggling 20% of doubt about what happened. All NHS maternity units offer some sort of service for postnatal women to discuss their care if they feel they need to. If you are having trouble accessing this, you can email the trust you received care from and request to see the birth reflections midwife, or simply ask for a debrief. Bring your written questions with you to any follow-up appointments so you can get all the answers you need. You might be tired or go blank when you think about what you wanted to ask, so go prepared. Remember that this service exists to help you, so ask and go through whatever it is you feel you need to. Sunday birth stories. There's such a huge variation between what it means, looks, and feels like to be a mother. As a midwife, I'm lucky enough to meet many mothers and to experience many births, whether a home birth, water birth, C-section, quick birth, or prolonged labour. But most people's version of birth is what they see in films and on TV, which, as we know, is not a true reflection of birth. Rather than keep moaning about the media's version of birth, I thought I'd try to help and change it in some small way. I started a feature on Instagram called Sunday Birth Stories, where women send me their birth stories and I share them on my own Instagram story. I share as many different stories as possible from women all over the world. Pregnant women want and need to know about birth, and postnatal women want and need to share their birth story. There's no scaremongering, just good advice. Remember Ina May Gaskin's wise words, it's bad manners to scare pregnant women. When women send me their story, if something seems to be in the wrong order or they aren't clear on something, I ask if that is exactly what happened. I never suggest that it is not, but I just ask the question. Doing this with hundreds of women has taught me that sometimes memory jumps and misses sections or naturally forgets key points. Birth is such a profound experience that things can get hazy. Our memories influence how we think and feel about every aspect of our lives. In relation to birth, it is so important that you have an accurate memory of your birth, what happened, why, and how. The best part about doing this feature is the feedback from women who send me their stories. Many say that writing it out really helped them understand and remember their birth. I get daily messages from first-time mums explaining that seeing other women's births really helped them understand the different aspects of birth and what to potentially expect, so they felt better prepared when they went into labour. They can see what a home birth looks like and what a C-section can look like, and the realness of the post-baby body. Emily, first-time mum, says, I love the variety of birth experiences you share, and it's so important for women to know that there are so many ways it can go. Luckily for me, everything worked out the way I hoped it would. But had it not, I would have known it was okay because of seeing other women's experiences. Many women have been so brave in sharing their intimate experiences and are very honest about how they felt and what they thought. This honesty leads to other mums feeling more normal about themselves and their situation. Knowing someone else feels or felt like you is like a weight being lifted. Writing out your birth story helps process your emotions and save some details that may otherwise be forgotten. As soon as I tell people that I'm a midwife, some instantly start telling me their own experience of birth. It can be almost like they have been waiting to ask questions and to get some answers from someone who might know. Women I have met for the first time can go into detail about their birth and how they felt. Sometimes at parties or weddings, I have spent hours talking to women about their births because they have never got the explanation they needed to understand their own birth story. Unfortunately, I can rarely give them all the answers they need, as I don't have access to the medical notes, but just telling someone seems to really help. Many of these women have not had bad experiences either. They just haven't had the opportunity to acknowledge their own birth story properly. Doing the Sunday birth stories and talking to women as I have done over the years has taught me that most women need some sort of birth debrief and enjoy sharing their birth story. Katie, first-time mum, says, the following months were a conflict of sheer joy that he was here, but also devastation at the way birth had turned out. I had a crash C-section under a general anaesthetic because it was an emergency, and it's very rare for this to happen. I went through every emotion of anger, sadness, jealousy, and feeling guilty that I shouldn't feel this way because I had a healthy baby. I had some counselling to deal with this and learnt that it is perfectly okay and valid to feel conflicting emotions. It's valid to grieve for a missed birth and for the things associated with that. They are independent events, and having a healthy baby does not cancel out these feelings. It is so important for all mums to understand their birth story. when debriefing might not be for you. There is some evidence that shows that there is no benefit in a debrief for women that have had traumatic experiences of birth, and that going through what happened with the notes may cause more trauma. Everyone experiences trauma differently, so if you are crying often about your birth, having nightmares or flashbacks, and often feeling anxious, it's important to address this as soon as possible with more specialist services, and your midwife, GP, or health visitor can help you to access these. Evidence shows that the most crucial time to be seen is within the first month of a difficult or traumatic birth. Katie, first-time mum, says, I had a debrief at 6 weeks as I needed to know what happened, and I'd definitely have another before or during another pregnancy. It was so useful in helping to understand why Charles got stuck and be able to express our point of view and where we felt things could have been more positive. As part of my debrief, the visit to theatres was amazing. The consultant midwife took me around one quiet Sunday, and we walked calmly from the labour ward to theatre, which last time had been running and terrifying. I saw where he was born, and they explained what had happened in terms of resuscitation, etc. It ended in the recovery room, which I do remember, so that was good. The experience felt like closure. Make Birth Better is a great campaign, and their site has a really helpful map of local birth trauma support services, so you can find out what's available to you in your area. Another brilliant support network, full of information, is Birth Trauma Association. Key points. We need to create a bigger and more realistic perspective of birth. Looking at different birth stories may help your perception of birth. One of the biggest stories you'll ever tell is your birth story, so it's important to write it out. In any birth, understanding your experience is part of your recovery. Your birth experience seriously matters. You need to take time to process your emotions surrounding it. Ask anything and everything you need to know about your birth. Your new normal and recognizing problems. Everyone is different, and the boundaries of normality are ever-changing according to culture and society. How you go about accepting your personal new normal may well be different to how your friend does it. As a new mum, drawing the line between what is normal to feel and experience and what is crossing over into illness can be hard. Baby blues, postnatal depression, PND, anxiety, and maternal mental health are topics that I could easily write an entire book about. Mental health illnesses are huge topics that we understand more about every day. Often, it is the person closest to you who spots things early on and helps you recognise any concerns. So this is a good section for your partner to listen to as well. Lots of women over the years have got on with it, marching on, wearing a superwoman cape. Try to make a decision now to avoid this approach to the postnatal period and your perception of depression, because marching on often isn't sustainable. Always talk to your midwife or GP if you have any concerns about your mental health. Anxiety, baby blues, and depression. Anxiety and depression are the most common mental health problems during pregnancy and after birth, and according to the NHS, they affect around 10 to 15% of women. However, several cases go unreported, so I suspect that statistic merely scratches the surface. We know today that women are more likely to get PND if they have previously experienced mental health issues, have a lack of or poor support system, or relationship difficulties. Previous abuse can also be a trigger. These are all factors to be aware of, But at the same time, suffering from a mental health illness can happen to anyone at any time. Anxiety. Every day I meet mothers who experience anxiety about something, especially in those early weeks after a baby is born. Anxiety can come in the form of intrusive thoughts, and some of these can be quite distressing. Mums don't often talk about intrusive thoughts, and this can give them more power than they really deserve. For example, you may play out a scenario in your head that you would never do in real life. Then you feel awful about thinking that and judge yourself. Most of us get intrusive thoughts and pass them off as ridiculousness. But when you're a new mum, you can start to judge yourself. Having negative thoughts does not make you a bad person or a bad mother. Your thoughts don't define you. Having said that, thoughts of self-harm or harming your baby are different. If you do get violent or aggressive thoughts, you need to seek help urgently, and don't be afraid of doing this. Thoughts like, "What if my baby becomes unwell?" create fear and lack of confidence that you'll be able to deal with a situation you might be presented with. This then spirals off into unhelpful and negative ways of thinking about yourself. Generally, that is where anxiety stems from for new mums. They think they won't be able to deal with things they might be presented with. You can manage, and you will do just fine. Pay attention to what you are worried about. Look it in the face and question, "What exactly am I worried about?" Address the anxiety like you would with any fears around birth, rather than let it spiral or beat yourself up about it. You might not love every new minute of motherhood, and that's perfectly okay. It is hard work at times. It's good to get comfortable with the fact you probably won't get to a place where you never worry about anything. Within reason, a certain amount of worrying serves a purpose. It's a defense mechanism and helps warn and prepare us. But if it takes up too much of your time, stops you from doing things you want to do, and affects your quality of life, then the balance has been tipped from useful to harmful. If that's the case, it's important to seek help for your anxiety so you can manage it properly. It can be helpful to learn strategies to calm your body down. I'm a fan of body scanning, where you pay attention to the parts of your body that are changing when you feel anxious. For example, anxiety may make you feel sick, increase your heart rate, or make you sweat. Scan your body from head to toe. Drop your shoulders, relax, and breathe deeply into each part of your body. This can help to relieve the feelings of anxiety. It can also help to run through the following 5 thoughts. 1. Is this thought useful? 2. Remember, you are not your thoughts. 3. The only thing you can really control is yourself. 4. Drop your shoulders, create space for yourself, and breathe deep. 5. Surrender to the present moment. It is what it is. Being prepared in practical ways can help your mindset too. One woman I saw told me about one of the first times she went out with her newborn. She forgot an umbrella and it rained. But the next time she remembered, and she happened to have an appointment with me. The first thing she said was, "Look," holding the umbrella like a baton. "I've got my shit together today. I've got my umbrella." As silly as it may sound, it's important to give yourself credit for what appear to be small things in motherhood. If you get out of the house with everything you need and arrive somewhere on time, winning. Celebrate the small successes because you've got a big job and you're doing great. Difficult roads often lead to beautiful destinations. Malcolm Lim. Baby blues. There's a difference between baby blues and postnatal depression, PND. Baby blues affect at least 60%, perhaps even 80% of women in the postnatal period. It usually kicks in around 3 to 5 days after having a baby. It is due to the fluctuation of hormones, lack of sleep, the mind-blowing event of giving birth, any postnatal pain you are having to deal with, and the fact you have just become a mother. Baby blues are waves of emotions, combined with a cocktail of hormones, resulting in a tearful period. It can leave some women feeling low or anxious for a few days, and it is also common to overreact to things. Go easy on yourself. It's okay to cry and get irritable. It's just a natural phase, just like the transition in labour and the birth pause. Like those two phases you may have already experienced, this too will come and then go. Be prepared to feel like this and let it all out. Kate, first-time mum, says, "The first 2 weeks were the hardest. I felt sick from all the meds, so the smell of Charles's milk made me feel sick. I was in a lot of pain from the wound infection and wanted to run away every day, but felt this huge sense of responsibility because the mum can never run. I wrote a list that I would add to every time I thought of something, all the things I knew I wanted to do with Charles. Beach visits, farm visits, etc. It gave me something to look forward to and focus on the future when I knew I would be pain-free and feel better mentally. 7 months later, I am more connected to my baby than ever. He's my little mate. He reaches for me when he's tired, and he has a special smile that only I seem to get. I didn't see him be born, but that becomes less and less relevant as each day passes. I was the cause of his first smile. I have seen his first roll. I fed him his first food, and I will be there for all of his other firsts. There is no greater truth than time is the best healer." Postnatal depression. Women often feel guilty or scared to admit they have PND, especially as they were expecting to be happy about having a baby and everyone around them was expecting the same. All of these perceptions and feelings around PND are common, but these feelings can delay recovery because admitting there is a problem is the first step to recovery. The more we talk about PND, the more we all learn. So it can become less a condition to feel embarrassed about and more something that we can ask for support for. It breaks my heart when I hear women say, "Maybe it's just me. I'm not good enough. I can't cope." Please don't ever feel like it's just you who feels like this. It's not. You are good enough. Postnatal depression is an illness and not something that makes you a bad or weak mum. The symptoms of PND are similar to those in depression at other times and include prolonged low mood, feeling irritable, exhausted, and not getting pleasure from things you normally would. It can start in late pregnancy, after the birth, or start later on. It really does vary in severity and timing. One woman said to me, "My husband knew something was seriously up when I shoveled my favourite burger into my mouth without any sign of pleasure, noises of mmm, or comments. I'm not joking, that was what led to my diagnosis." This new mum couldn't see it herself, but the lack of enjoyment was genuinely the final clue for her partner. He thought she was down, but when she gained no pleasure from something she always loved, he knew he needed to help her get better. There is no physical test for PND, and interestingly, psychiatry is one of the only specialities that doesn't always look at what they need to treat first. If someone has a stroke, they will have brain scans and MRIs. But when it comes to diagnosing and treating mental illnesses, it's rare that we look at the structure of the brain first. Although some neuroscientists and psychiatrists are starting to do this pre-diagnosis. As a rough guideline, if you find symptoms are persisting for more than 2 weeks, then you need to seek help from your doctor. They will run through some questions to diagnose PND and then offer help, perhaps therapy or medication. If you are diagnosed with PND, it's important to remember you are not letting anyone down. Speaking to your doctor will mark the beginning of your journey towards feeling better. Depending on your specific symptoms, your doctor will work with you to make a plan. Sometimes the doctor may prescribe medication, and it is very common to worry about the effect that the pills may have on your baby if you are breastfeeding. Rest assured that the doctor would not prescribe anything that could harm your baby. And the most important thing for the health of your baby is to have a healthy mother. Ellie, midwife and first-time mum, says, I had expected motherhood to be this wonderful thing, but it wasn't. I just didn't feel attached to her. With my feelings going from just wanting to leave the house to wanting to go back to work and my normal life. Sisterhood is such an important support network that I was craving. All I wanted was my mum to come and take care of me and guide me through. My husband was very supportive during this time, but it was my mum who I needed. She'd had 4 children and breastfed all of us for over a year. It was her experience that I wanted. The turning point for me was my health visitor, who was just great. I was really open and honest and expressed my concerns about PND, and she arranged a follow-up a week later. After my follow-up, and once we got past the first 2 weeks, I felt completely different and had started to turn a corner. I have since found some excellent profiles online which are just honest about things. I wish I'd had these in my early days when I was worried it was just me who felt lonely, out of my depth, and overwhelmed with this huge life change. One thing worth mentioning here is that if you have been given medication and a few months have passed and you're feeling better, you should speak to your doctor about whether or not to continue with it. You should have been given this advice from the beginning, but might not have taken it in at the time. Generally, this type of medication will be given alongside talking therapy of some sort, so it is also worth visiting your doctor every once in a while to give an update on how that is going so that your records are up to date and that everyone has the full picture. Postnatal depression and partners. It is not only mums who suffer from mental health problems in the postnatal period. It is thought that between 4 to 25% of men have PND in the 2 months following birth. The onset can be more gradual than it is in women. Dads can often feel lonely and disconnected from their friends, especially if they are caring for a mum who has PND. One factor is that men tend to talk less about it. Women are sometimes a bit better at coming forward and admitting that there is a problem, while men can suffer in silence. A campaign that I have seen on social media recently nailed it with one question. Hashtag, how are you, Dad? It is important to keep asking your partner how they are too. It is difficult sometimes amidst all the nappies, feeding, and lack of sleep to take care of one another like you used to and to really notice how the other one is feeling. The baby comes first, and that is completely natural. A friend of mine and her partner decided to set an alarm on their phones for every 5 days at the same time. And they dedicated 10 minutes to just being open about how they were feeling that week. If they couldn't do it right away, they would snooze the alarm until they could. It started as a joke to begin with, but once they got into the habit, it became something they both started to depend on. Their baby is now 3 years old, and they still have a regular catch-up out of habit. If you notice that something doesn't seem quite right, then have a chat with your partner, even if the baby is crying in the background, and it's short and sweet. Then, set aside some time to make a plan together to seek help. It sometimes helps to remind one another that you are not just parents, but partners too, and you are in this together. Myth. I had the perfect birth, so I won't get PND. Postnatal depression is not dependent on the type of birth that you have. Sometimes there is an assumption that a woman who has had a straightforward birth that went according to plan will and should be mentally well. That is not the case, and it's not the case for us to diagnose mental health based on birth experience. A difficult or traumatic birth is more likely to impact mental health, but that doesn't mean to say if you have had a positive birth experience, you won't get baby blues or postnatal depression. Please don't feel unworthy of seeking help after your dream birth. The change of identity and shift into motherhood can be destabilizing for everyone. Who am I? You might not feel depressed, but you might just not feel like yourself. One day in your postpartum period, you may walk past a mirror and not recognize your own reflection. And one day, you may ask yourself, who am I? It's normal. Almost every first-time mum I have looked after goes through some sort of identity crisis. Some are very minor, fleeting thoughts, and some are intensely confusing. Research shows that on average, it takes 2 to 4 years for women to feel like themselves again after having a baby. Just about the time you might be thinking of having another one. If you have been used to working set hours with a busy, independent routine, it may take time to accept the changes you are now facing. Even when you go back to work and normal life, you may not really feel like yourself for a long time. Try not to judge who you have become. You're a strong woman and you're someone's mum. You're doing so well managing everything. Be mindful of the way you are talking to yourself. Sometimes the things we say to ourselves are shocking, and if another person said those things, we may call it domestic abuse. We have learned to be harsh on ourselves. As children, when we look in the mirror, we are wowed, intrigued, and beautiful. It is only as we get older we start to compare and judge ourselves. Try to talk to yourself the way you would talk to a close friend who you love and care about. In any major life change, there is a loss. Even the changes you are truly grateful for. There is a sort of grief that comes with this loss. But in new motherhood, the feeling of grief coexists with joy and shows you a whole new level of strength you never knew you had. NADS, first-time mum, said, I really struggled the first month after having Luca. You know you are going to have a baby, but nothing can prepare you for how little time you have to yourself. After a C-section, I had to take things even easier than a vaginal labour. My normal way of being NADS would be going to a gym class, getting my nails done, or my eyebrows. During pregnancy, I was still doing all that, so it was a massive change, let alone having a baby to look after as well. A big part of my life before becoming a mum was my routine, and that goes out of the window with a baby. So you have all of these emotions and frustration because you are literally in the great unknown. Someone said to me, it's important to still have you time, even if you have a baby. My immediate reaction was, oh God, how selfish. But it wasn't until I accepted that and got my mum to come over and went to dye my hair, only upstairs, mind, but still, that I started to slowly but surely feel like me again. A good analogy that I tell women about is the temperature of the shower. A hot shower is unpleasant, and so is a cold shower. But when you mix the two, it's lovely. It can just take a little adjusting to get the temperature that's right for you. This is a fine balance that is slightly different for everyone too. I may find your shower too hot. So try not to focus on what works for other mums if it simply isn't working for you. Having a rule early on of taking just a few minutes a day to yourself is the best way to avoid getting lost in nappies. Katie, mum of one and expecting baby number two, says, take 10 minutes time out away from the baby every day from newborn. Even just 10 minutes of breathing and listening to favourite music in another room, a bath, really enjoying a hot cup of tea, or walk outside without the baby. This saved me and reminded me every day of who I was, not just a mummy. The mind-body connection. As I mentioned, PND can happen to anyone, but there are a few things that you might find interesting about depression in general. There are some recent discoveries about depression and neuroimmunology, a field combining neuroscience and the study of the nervous system and the immune system. More than 100 trillion bacteria are living and working in your gut, and collectively, these microorganisms are referred to as the microbiome. The microbiome is thought to help our body in a number of ways, like processing nutrients, digestion, and producing immune molecules that heal wounds and fight inflammation. A new theory is emerging that there is a stronger connection between our gut and brain than was originally thought. Dr. Edward Bulmer has written a brilliant book called The Inflamed Mind that gives more insight into the relationship between inflammation and depression. In short, and grossly simplified, he explains that inflammation has an effect on human behaviour. The inflammation proteins and cells in the body directly change the way our brains work, which in turn changes our thoughts and behaviour. The brain and immune function were believed to have nothing to do with each other. Some experts mistakenly thought the blood-brain barrier protected the brain from inflammation in the body, dividing the mind and body into two separate entities. We now know that cytokines, inflammation signalers, do in fact get through the blood-brain barrier, and pro-inflammatory cytokines increase in the third trimester of pregnancy. Bulmer explains that inflammation in the brain may have a link to depression. Around 40% of depressed patients are also inflamed. We used to think of depression as all about the mind, but we need to think of how the body affects the brain too. What I like particularly about this latest science is that it helps us move away from the stigma and self-criticism and towards understanding. The belief that inflammation in the body affects the brain's function means we should be able to talk more openly about our struggles rather than feel ashamed or become a victim of self-blame. It's important to bear in mind that there could also be underlying physical causes for PND. For example, an underactive thyroid or low levels of vitamin B. I have seen a few women diagnosed with hyperthyroidism after years of believing they had depression all that time. The symptoms are very similar, so blood tests can be worth considering too. Inflammation in the body. Before we go into anti-inflammatory living, it is important to note that this theory is new, and the word inflammation is a bit of a buzzword. The evidence surrounding inflammation in the body and its potential effect on the mind is not entirely conclusive. The jury is still out. Being diagnosed with depression doesn't mean that you have inflammation, and vice versa. Just to be clear, it is possible that having PND has nothing to do with inflammation. Having said that, the tips coming up lead to a healthier lifestyle anyway, and if science is able to prove a definite link between inflammation and depression, it's a win-win all round. Here are some things to think about to reduce your chances of inflammation in the body. Hydration. Hydrating really well helps to keep things moving through the liver, kidneys, and bowels. Generally speaking, the more hydrated you are, the less inflammation in your body. Aim for about 2 to 2.5 litres per day. Chlorine isn't good for us or for the microbiome. If you haven't already, then consider investing in a decent water filter for your tap water. They're not too expensive and well worth it. There's also the more expensive option of fitting a filter at source, under the kitchen tap. The water will also taste better. Daily movement. As Robin mentioned earlier on, you're not going to be doing a HIIT workout soon after you have had a baby, but gentle daily movement is important. Daily movement can simply be walking around your garden or house or swaying on the spot with your baby. Massage also helps to get your circulation moving. You can gradually increase the intensity of your daily movement over time, and many of the classes you did in pregnancy, like yoga or Pilates, will offer postnatal classes and advice too. It is recommended that you leave it at least 3 months before returning to running. Meditation. I can't emphasize the benefits of meditation enough. The world's leading scientists, philosophers, and physicists now agree that meditation reduces anxiety and increases mental control and overall happiness by allowing the mind to find peace with the present moment. EEGs, electroencephalogram, performed on monks, highlighted a clear difference in brainwave activity. As a professional who is skeptical, interested in evidence and first-hand experiences, I went to a monastery in Tibet to find out more for myself. I spent 11 days with a female monk, 10 hours from the city I landed in. We slept in the same room and spent the best part of 24 hours a day together. I learned so much about my mental health and found true inner peace through meditation. It can take a while to learn how to meditate, especially if you are feeling depressed. But there are classes you can attend or apps you can use to learn gradually. Diet. Nourish your brain with healthy fats such as avocado, eggs, olive oil, flax seeds, and nuts. Reducing the amount of refined carbs in your diet like white bread, pastries, and biscuits is helpful. Grains are good to eat along with probiotics like kimchi, fermented pickle, and kefir, but you can take probiotic supplements if you prefer. Turmeric has been ingested for years and is thought to have various benefits. I have it fresh every morning in hot water with black pepper and manuka honey. Hot water and black pepper helps you absorb the nutrients from turmeric. Fruits like berries, lemons, and limes are great for anti-inflammatory properties too. Stress. When you feel stressed or overwhelmed, the body goes into fight or flight mode. The body thinks you need to run away or fight to save your life, and in response, hormones are released to help you do just that. When you are in fight or flight mode for an extended period of time, your body is surviving, not thriving. Inflammation in the body is a response to a threat, whether it's a foreign invader like bacteria or virus, and even a psychological or emotional threat that leads to stress. In response to this, the immune system sends out an army of molecules called pro-inflammatory cytokines to attack the invaders. Your best self. At times, motherhood may feel like you've been given a challenge that is almost too hard for you. But being in that place is where humans can really grow and reach their higher self. Every new mum goes through some sort of emotional struggle, and accepting your new normal can be a challenge in itself. Your energy, body, and mind are focused on being a mother. The truth is, your best self is all you can ever be. You are doing a great job. Forgive yourself for the tiny errors you make. Try not to overthink or question your own judgment. And remember to be kind to yourself. Key points. Seek support early on if you have any concerns over your mental health. The most common mental health illnesses after having a baby are anxiety and depression. Remember to check in with your partner too. The more open everyone is about mental illness, the better our understanding will be. Things that are good for your body are also good for your mind. Self-care is simple, and you need to dedicate time to it. Prevent and reduce inflammation. You can only ever be your best self. It takes a village to raise a mum. They say it takes a village to raise a child, but the same can be said for raising a mum. For the whole of human history, we have mostly evolved to raise children in tribes and villages. Traditionally, women would learn from their own mums, sisters, cousins, and other women in their villages. The elders in the village passed on their wisdom. Understanding birth, breastfeeding, and all the changes motherhood brings was part of growing up, was learned behaviour, and was openly talked about. In many places around the world, this is how women learn about motherhood. The elders teach them. As we don't live like this anymore in the Western world, we have a bit of a broken chain of wisdom. Rarely is the type of support you need as a new mum, especially in the postnatal period, talked about. In this section, we will rebuild some links and find out why it takes a village to raise a mum and how to build your own modern-day village. Your new coping strategies. The chances are that at some point in your life, you have felt a little out of sync or unsure about yourself, and you found coping strategies to help, such as a night out, a few drinks, an evening run, reading a book, or watching a film from start to finish. These things aren't so easy to do with a tiny baby. Having people to lean on helps you create new coping strategies for the various changes you are going through as a new mum. When you start a new job, just knowing who you can go for lunch with gives you a feeling of safety and stability. This scenario is so similar to new motherhood. Treat it as though you are going into a new workplace with a brand new role. You need to have that bit of stability and support from someone else. It is even better when it's someone else who has a little more experience than you. We have been sold the idea of independence and strength, which is great, and I'm all for the independent women. But that sometimes makes new mums feel like they shouldn't need anyone to lean on. There's no shame in needing a friend. So try to put yourself out there and make new friends whenever you can. It can change everything. Asking for help. When it comes down to it, we're pretty bad at asking for help, and sometimes even accepting help. Honestly, no one is going to think any less of you for reaching out. Imagine one of your good friends calling you right now and saying, "I'm struggling a bit this week. Could you pop round at some point? I'm so tired and just need a bit of help." Would you think any less of her? Your close friends will understand if you reach out. Most people are happy to help if you ask, and when help is offered, why say no? Creating your village can also mean moving away from people or things that are causing you more stress. Minimise contact with those who are unhelpful or overly critical. You may even need to cut them off if you feel it's necessary. As harsh as that sounds, it can be liberating. Toxic, jealous, or insecure people won't help you build and sustain your nest. They won't help to raise you. On the positive side, now might be a good time to move towards that joker you know. Everyone knows a joker, and laughter is known to have similar effects to antidepressants because it raises serotonin levels. Laughter and not taking yourself so seriously won't cure a mental health problem, and I'd never mask the darkness of loneliness and depression with. Just laugh it off and you'll be fine. But finding ways to enjoy yourself can help you deal with the more difficult days. Meeting and hanging out with like-minded parents helps to normalise your transition and change of identity. You can bounce things off each other, laugh things off, run things by each other, and most importantly, not feel judged. Large-scale research over many years shows that with a good support network, parents can and do feel more confident in their role. Look up local support groups, mother and baby groups, mums meetups, or digital networks like Channel Mum, and apps like Let's Mush or Mums Anywhere. Jessica, second time mum, says, 3 words, find your tribe. Join mums groups, music groups, local toddler groups, libraries. Keep trying until you find the people who you click with, and then mum date them. Matrescence. Alexandra Sachs has a TED Talk on the discovery of matrescence, a word describing the transition from woman to mother. The main point she makes is about the fact that we all remember going through adolescence. We were hormonal, moody, sometimes confused, and had breakouts, and our bodies grew in strange places at fast paces, and at the same time, people expected you to be grown up in a new way. When you think about it, adolescent changes are similar to the changes you go through as a new mum. Matrescence is the word she suggests we use to describe this transformation. We know it's normal for teenagers to feel a bit unsure of themselves, so she asks, why don't we think about pregnancy and the postnatal period in the same way as adolescence? Sachs points out that we have entire books written on the developmental and physical changes of adolescence, but we don't even have a word to describe the transition to motherhood. The changes motherhood bring can lead to an upheaval of emotions and questions about how you feel you fit into the world. By talking to others and being honest about how you feel, even to that mum who looks confident, you'll discover that most mums feel the same way. Remember that your version of motherhood doesn't have to look like a way that makes other people feel comfortable. You should do what you want, when you want, and how you want to. Challenging the expectations can be hard, but motherhood is liberating in that you can break away from any oppressive cultural norms and limitations. You can reinvent things and teach your baby what you want to. Sharing your thoughts. We spend a lot of time with babies who, when young, are non-verbal creatures. We start to talk to ourselves, often internally. On average, we have between 60,000 to 90,000 thoughts per day. If your partner goes back to work and you spend a lot of time alone with your baby, the chances are that some negative thoughts will start to creep in. Someone else needs to hear these thoughts in order for you to physically get rid of them. Having a get-together morning once a week with other parents is really beneficial for your mental health. Research shows that a good social network can actually extend your life expectancy. If there's no local groups on regularly enough for you, organise your own mama morning. Ask all the mums you know, your friends of friends, brothers' girlfriends' friends with babies, and any other mums that live nearby. Good relationships and social lives are so good for human health. Social interaction activates the genes in your body that help your immune system fight against diseases. The University of California did a study and found that women with breast cancer are 4 times more likely to recover successfully if they have a strong connection with a supportive group of friends and family. The power of connecting with someone and being honest changes the brain's chemistry. we get a flood of two happy hormones, dopamine and oxytocin. These hormones can help you cope better with tougher days and the sleep deprivation that new mumhood brings. Life won't be like it was before baby arrived. But once you create your own modern village, you will have deep and very meaningful, honest and frank relationships that can enhance your life. Key points. There's no shame in needing a friend. Do put yourself out there. Ask for help if and when you need it. Matrescence is like adolescence. Social interaction changes brain chemistry. Your mum mates are some of the best mates you'll make. How to live in the digital age as a new mum. We are living in such a unique time. Some historians and philosophers have labelled it a digital revolution. We have a world of information constantly at our fingertips, and there's not much you can't find out within seconds online. As well as having access to an overwhelming amount of information, we also have insight into everyone else's lives. Can you remember what it was like trying to keep in contact with all of your friends before social media, or having to wait for songs to come on the radio to hear them? We have seen and been through the progression of the digital age, but our babies will be the first generation in human history to grow up with Ask Alexa, take a ride in a driverless car, and have their lives digitally documented. The digital age is progressing at such a fast pace and is clearly here to stay. It is important that you use what is available wisely, like connecting with other parents, yet also give some thought to how to manage the side of the digital age that can be unhelpful. Digital addiction. Online content has become part of what's known as the attention economy due to our ever-increasing focus on smartphones. A Time magazine poll found that 84% of people are attached to their phones on a daily basis, with 20% checking them every 10 minutes. And these stats are in line with other findings in relation to smartphone usage. Part of the attraction to smartphones comes from the rush of endorphins, happy hormones, they deliver. Scientists have found that every time we receive a notification of a like, share, retweet, or comment, the pleasure center of our brain receives a satisfying rush of these neurochemicals. Simon Sinek, TED speaker, the author of multiple best-selling books and social media influencer, talks about the dangers of digital addiction, and he goes as far as saying that social media has the same effect on the brain as some drugs, alcohol, and gambling. Yet there are no regulations for it. He is most concerned about children and teenagers and their increasingly high dependence to be liked or followed online. Our brains have developed to operate in a certain way as part of evolution. We are hardwired to get distracted, stop, assess, and analyse things. So no matter how hard we try, sometimes switching off or disengaging with your digital device is hard to do. A 2009 study of macaque monkeys showed that when primates receive information, their dopamine systems are activated too, just like when they find food. If we apply that to humans, it may explain why we end up having our phone in one hand, the TV on, and the Kindle on the side table. The hit of happy hormones that come from likes and receiving new information actually feels good. Our human need-to-know mentality also makes navigating new motherhood even harder. We all want the best for our babies, and there are also physiological rewards that feel good from gaining information. By combining those two desires, you're particularly vulnerable to the downfall of the digital age and information overload. Not to mention the fact that most apps and websites are specifically designed to grab our attention and keep us exploring them. Social media platforms allow people to see you're active or have seen their message, making us feel obliged to reply. Many women tell me about how they end up in a social media hole after opening the app first thing when on maternity leave. Before they know it, they've lost half an hour scrolling, liking, following, watching, shopping, and the list goes on. The brain is so well stimulated and satisfied on social media, it is difficult to get off, out, and meet people in the real world. You can feel connections from people online, but as we will go on to talk about, nothing beats physical communication, seeing people's faces, and getting a hug. Far less of your senses and human needs are met through a screen. The positives. Most of us use some form of social media platform, and overall, social media has a lot of power. Research shows that social media users generally fall into one of two categories: meformers, who make up about 80% of users, and mostly post information about themselves, and informers, who make up about 20% of users, and post information that isn't immediately related to themselves. Regardless of what category they fall into, social media has given some people a voice who wouldn't traditionally have had a voice, and a platform to influence thousands of other people. In some way, I believe it has given traditional mass media less power, because the general public can share things, publicly challenge journalism and politics, and openly speak up against things or protest to drive change. Another area that has a lot of online positives are TED Talks, podcasts, health apps, or YouTubers offering educational or motivational talks and support. There is a whole new world of celebrities made online who have been chosen by the public as opposed to by the press. I have built a communications platform with both women and midwives on social media. I'm grateful to be living in this time and to have had the opportunity to spread messages and communicate so easily with women from all over the world. The simple fact is, there is no way I would have had the impact I have had so far without social media. Aside from giving people a voice, spreading messages, and driving change, it's a great way to stay in contact with friends who don't live near you, as they can catch up on your life and stay close to what's going on with you. Some social media accounts are just brilliant for new and expectant mums because they help to educate women about what to expect and give insight into what's normal. As I've mentioned, if you're on social media, follow positive accounts to create your own narrative and understanding of motherhood. Lots of women I meet also build their tribes off the back of social media and have their own groups or look to forums for help and support. The internet is a great place to search and find events and groups in your local area. Messaging your WhatsApp group at 4 a.m. and getting an instant response can help you feel less alone as the rest of the world sleeps soundly. We are lucky to reap the benefits that social media and digital access bring, but like most good things, it has its downsides, and some of those can be particularly damaging to new mums. A bit more on this now. Through the eyes of a filter. Social media is rarely an accurate reflection of real life. For some, it's simply a well-planned business, and for others, it's a way to portray their life in its best form. Many people only post about the good times, hashtag blessed, and rarely document the bad times. We are literally looking at people's lives through a filter. We've all seen contradicting posts people put out there, and you can probably think of someone now who couldn't be further from what they portray themselves as on social media. You need to protect yourself in early motherhood because perhaps you're more sensitive, self-critical, and doubtful than usual. so that images of perfect families and postnatal bodies could make you doubt yourself and even resent your own reflection. Photos can be easily edited, photoshopped, or touched up to create illusions. Make a conscious decision to remember this when seeing a new mum with a flat tum. Managing your social media influences at this time in your life is a must. Being behind a screen changes people's behaviour too. Most of us will have read comments or responses and thought, "I would wonder if you'd say that to their face." Keyboard warriors are a phenomenon that psychologists refer to as toxic disinhibition. This is the idea that because the recipient of the message isn't physically tangible, an individual is more likely to make online statements that they wouldn't face to face. Online bullying and trolling are a big problem because people can hide behind a device or perhaps even a fake account. These keyboard warriors can cause serious anxiety, and comments on your personal life can really hurt at any time, but especially when you're feeling a bit vulnerable in matrescence. Consumption and staying healthy. There is a natural tendency for humans to seek out information that confirms their own opinions, confirmation bias. We tend, therefore, to follow people on social media who reflect that. You may have created a digital world that suits your own bias. It's so easily done, and I think we are all guilty of it at times, in some shape or form. Simply being aware of the narrative that serves your own bias is healthy and well-balanced. I hear quite a lot about how new mothers feel obliged to answer messages and can be inundated and overwhelmed when they just don't need it. It's often just well-wishers, relatives who are eager to get news, and people wanting updates. But as a result of living in the digital age, what we've all come to expect are answers now. We know that we have control of our devices and can turn them off whenever we like, but those of us who are used to being on their phones a lot may find this difficult. If you can't bring yourself to switch it off totally, you can always go into your settings and turn off notifications that pop up and disrupt your peace. Choose a time when you feel able to deal with messages, like when you are in a bit more of a routine and know your baby will be napping around 11 a.m. Or even set up an automatic response to say you can't reply at the moment. You can also unsubscribe from companies that fill your email inbox with their marketing material, adding little value to your life, or direct more messages to your spam folder. To help manage your digital exposure, consider unsubscribing yourself from everything that's not useful at this time, only keeping a small number of blogs, apps, and podcasts that add value to your life as a new mum. There's an increasing demand for services like UnrollMe, which can help you do this quickly, or the app Rescue Time. Facebook Newsfeed Eradicator can help you avoid the distractions of the internet for longer periods of time. Stay connected to the digital world, but only in a way that suits you. Try to take digital breaks too. Digital detox is becoming trendy. Having a little time away from technology may give you more time for your own mental space and peace. I used to live on Instagram and decided to set myself some rules. I don't open Instagram until midday on Tuesday and Friday mornings. And as sad as it sounds, that time away has had a massive impact on my mornings. I feel far more in tune with myself and have a chance to think about me before I open up to what's going on in the rest of the world or respond to other people's requests. Setting this rule is a form of self-care. What other people are doing or want from you is not as important as what you are doing and what you need from yourself. Another good tip is to avoid posting for the approval of a hypothetical audience in your head. Instead, try to create for yourself, your family, and for the joy that comes from the creative and adaptive process of motherhood. There is a current movement of parents who are choosing not to post any photos of their children on social media without their consent. Instead, they have their own private album of photos on their phone or digital device or a WhatsApp group with their family for sharing cute snaps. Going old school. You probably have an old school photo album somewhere that your mum or dad or nan created. But because your baby is living in the digital age, you'll have so many memories you can easily capture for them. We live in a slightly different time, where the cameras are better quality and therefore a little less forgiving. However, one day your baby will treasure these digital memories, so no matter how big you feel, what your hair looks like, or whether or not you've had a shower, your grown-up baby will want to see your face. So take lots of photos that include you. Get in all the photos and videos, because if you dig out those old school photo albums, I bet you don't look at one photo and think, "Mum looks awful. Don't think she showered that day." You are more intrigued and grateful to see her younger self. Screen time around your baby. Lastly, there is a theory that when parents use technology frequently and for extended periods of time, it can have negative effects on their child's development. Babies need a lot of sensory interaction so they can mimic and learn about the world and universal laws. Mirroring is when they observe and copy you in everything that you do. This impacts how they develop socially and intellectually. When you're reading a post on social media or texting, your face is usually fairly emotionless, like it is as you're listening to this now. Research has shown that emotionless expressions can be distressing for babies, especially when they are trying to engage with their parents. When you are fully engaged, you show your baby a wide range of facial expressions, language, and sounds. The brain of a young baby is shaped by the interactions they have with their parents and familiar people. And as mentioned, this starts at a very early age. It's not realistic or necessary to completely stop using your phone and other devices around your baby. But it's important to be aware of your use. Key points. We are living in the digital age for the first time in human history. The digital age has given people a platform to help new mums connect with each other. We get a rush of happy hormones from likes, but nothing beats face-to-face interaction. You control your devices, so unsubscribe and pay attention only to what matters in your life. Capturing new mum moments are so precious, and that includes yourself. Remember that your expressions really matter to your baby, and if you're on your device a lot, you'll be less expressive. A final note. I'm a little sad we've got to the end now. Writing this book has reminded me once again how amazing us women and our bodies are. More than anything, I hope you feel more confident about your abilities and now have a few more tools to navigate your pregnancy, to make decisions, to manage your birth and early motherhood, and feel good about this transformative journey you're on. What an incredible time it is to be a mother. Motherhood shows you that you have a whole other level of strength you never knew you had. Remember, all you can ever do is your best, which is more than enough. You have so got this. Love, Marie-Louise. We hope you have enjoyed this Penguin audio production of The Modern Midwife's Guide to Pregnancy, Birth and Beyond. How to have a healthier pregnancy, easier birth and smoother postnatal period. By Marie-Louise. Read by Marie-Louise. It was produced by Michael Bennett and the post-production was by Lucy Rushton. For more Penguin audio productions, Visit us at penguin.co.uk/audio. Thanks for listening. Copyright in recording, Penguin Audio, 2020. Text copyright, Marie-Louise, 2020. All rights reserved. The moral rights of the author have been asserted.